Call the Senate House Committee meeting to order. And let the record show that Senator Duncan, Kelly, Jones, and Fisher in attendance. The first item is SJR 21, State Grant for Assistive Technology. Senator Feuerkamp is the prime sponsor. Senator Feuerkamp, why don't you come and join us?
Thank you very much, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record. I'm Betty Feuerkamp, District K. By passing this joint Resolution 21, we show our support for the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation's application for our $500,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Education. The grant will be used to establish a program to provide disabled Alaskans with the most current assistive technology. That's a phrase used to describe the technological tools and services that help people with disabilities. The grant is 100% federal grant. It requires no state matching funds. Only 10 of these grants will be issued this year. There will be 20 grants next year. And then all states will be eligible for grants in the third year of the program. If the division is successful in obtaining a grant this year, it will automatically be awarded another $500,000 grant next year and the following year for a total of $1.5 million. The resolution has a zero fiscal note. It's supported by the Division of Voc Rehabilitation. Pat Young's here. He can answer most of the questions that I can't answer on it. I think all of you have all of the materials that we brought you, including the excerpts from the federal grant, fiscal notes, the whole sphere. And if you have questions on it, he's testifying next. I need to go to a subcommittee meeting if you don't have questions for me.
Thank you. Any questions of Senator Feuerkamp? Pat, you want to? Yeah, why don't you come up? Senator, why don't you just stay there?
All right.
Does anybody have any questions? You signed up to testify, but maybe I would suspect you're going to be a proponent of the bill. So are there any questions? Why don't we just ask if there's any questions? I just have one. And my question is, Pat, that if we're in this situation, how locked in are we? In other words, let's say that the state decides that in the first year, for some reason, they don't want to go the second year. Are you still locked in? Or?
No, sir. It's on a competitive basis to start with. Then if we want to discontinue, we can discontinue if the money would go back to the federal government.
Oh, it wouldn't come to the general fund?
No.
Well, trying to get some money for it. No.
We think it's an exciting program. We were successful on a very similar project where they only issued 10 grants the first year on a different project almost 5 years ago. And we were, out of 120 applications, we were number two in the nation. And so that brought in $500,000 a year for 5 years, and we're not required to continue that program at the end of it. We think it's just a great opportunity to start something up. We have nothing going on assistive technology in the state, really, to provide for those handicapped. And this is from birth to death. It's not a voc rehab program. It's for anyone.
Senator Jones? Well, let me ask, is anybody else from the general public wish to testify on this particular piece of legislation? There is no body. The public hearing is closed. What's the wish of the chairman?
I move and ask unanimous consent that the resolution number 21 be sent out of committee for the individual recommendations.
Any objections? Okay, so be it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next is Senate Joint Resolution number 29. Senator Parshall can come in. Senator, I would assume you're advocating the committee substitute.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, since the original bill was drafted, there were just a couple of small changes. One was the inclusion of the ADAC Naval Station in the list of schools, military schools in the state. The other was a grammatical change or a very slight technical change on line 20 on page 1, adding words cannot continue to meet large capital, and then I think we somehow inadvertently left out the name of the president on who to send the resolution to.
Sure, and partisan politics is what it showed.
Well, we did include the vice president. So
oh,
I.
What's his name?
So with that, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, I would.
well, that's okay. You can call him Mr. Chairman.
I would be speaking to and advocating the proposed CS before you. As many of you know, there has been a long-standing problem with military schools throughout Alaska on who owned them, who had responsibility for maintaining them, and specifically, who had the obligation for capital improvements. Unlike other schools, for example, and I'll just speak to Anchorage, where a couple of years ago, Anchorage Municipality issued a bond issue for $100 million of capital improvements throughout Anchorage. None of those dollars ended up on base schools, even though the base schools are run by the school district, are very much a part of the district. They are not owned by the municipality or the school district, and therefore are not eligible for receipt of bond issue. Similarly, they are limited under a prior agreement to only capital improvements of $25,000. That's not a problem when you have new schools, but as the schools get older, as Senator Kelly particularly knows in our case, you reach the need for capital projects and capital improvements. That has largely been met to date by individual legislators using district allocations of capital to do that. We are reaching a point, though, not only in Anchorage, but throughout the state, where these base schools are getting older, and large-scale improvements will be necessary. In fact, it's estimated that right now there's between $42 and $45 million of capital improvements necessary on base schools. To give you a comparison, in this fiscal year's capital budget request by the governor, I believe there was $1 million for Anchorage-based schools, and I think $1 million for Fairbanks-based schools, hardly scratching the surface. So what this resolution would do would call upon the federal government to make improvements to base schools that they own and they own now, and bring them up to code, and then ultimately turn them over to the local school districts, so that from that point forward, the local districts would be responsible for both operation and maintenance and capital improvement of those schools. Clearly, the situation we're in is much like the BIA schools. We hesitate just to have them turned over to us because the federal government has exemption from fire safety code, for example. When they become part of the district or municipality, we instantly assume a huge liability for bringing them up to code, and that's, of course, what we would hope to have them to transfer contingent on their bringing the schools up to code. So this resolution calls for those actions to happen.
Senator Kelly?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm aware of this problem. I represent Fort Richardson, and I have had Elmendorf Air Force Base in the past. And, you know, we have, as a legislature, over the years, appropriated several thousands of dollars to try to upgrade the schools that we have in our area. But most of the schools are very old, and it's a never-ending process. And so I support the resolution, but I would like to change some of the wording on line 20, where it says, whereas the state cannot continue to meet the remaining large capital needs of military-based schools. Frankly, we're having trouble meeting large capital needs of all schools throughout the state of Alaska, not just military schools. And I know that we have put money into military schools in our area, and so I would like that to read, whereas the state is having trouble meeting remaining large capital needs of schools throughout the state due to severe decline in state revenue.
Okay, let's do this. Let's adopt this committee substitute first. Somebody want to move?
Yeah.
Move the adoption of the committee substitute. Mm-hmm. Any objections?
No.
Okay, now, Senator Kelly, you want to make a change, which would be in the form of a committee substitute.
I want to move to amend the committee substitute to read, whereas the state is having trouble meeting the remaining large capital needs of schools throughout the state due to a severe decline in state revenue. It's a larger problem than just military schools.
positions, that's, so what we're going to address is the, this committee substitute, and that's to meet your approval.
I agree.
Okay, any questions of, I still refer to you as Representative Parks, you know, I have a hard time with that.
That's part of my self-image also.
Is it? Oh, boy. Do you have any questions, anybody? Okay, why don't you just keep with us, Senator, we do have some other people. David Cosby.
This was on SB 73.
Pardon?
On SB 73.
Oh, I see, we mixed. Which shows how much support there is for this, but nobody. Anybody in the general public that wishes?
There is a position paper in your packet from the Board of Education, Department of Education.
No, it's well documented, Senator.
I didn't want it to be assumed that there was no other support.
Yeah, no. Anybody else from the public on committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 29? A public hearing is closed. What's the wish of the committee?
Chairman, I move that the Senate S Committee move out SJR 29 committee substitute as amended as individual rights.
Any objection?
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, now we have the next item is Senate Bill 136, an act establishing the Alaska Education Trust Fund and authorizing advanced tuition payment contracts and providing for an effective date. Is somebody here from the Senator Petula's office? Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Terrell. And I'm here on the behalf of Senator Curtula, who was unable to be here today, to speak to SB 136. Basically, the incentive for this legislation was because parents have been concerned and are continuing to be concerned about the rising costs of tuition of education for higher education. This bill will provide or would provide a form of guaranteed tuition payment plan, which will assure the prepayment of tuition no matter what happens with inflation. The way it would essentially work is that a parent, could be a grandparent, it could be anyone, a purchaser, enters into a contract with the Division of Post-Secondary Education and pays a certain sum of money and enters into a contract. It can be a lump sum, or it can be an installment. Payment of that would ensure a four-year undergraduate education at any University of Alaska campus. The money can be cash, or it can be a permanent fund dividend, it can be a gift. The legislation leaves it flexible. It's deposited into a separate fund, which in this case is the Alaska Education Trust Fund, and the Division of the Department of Revenue would then manage the fund. It would invest it. At the time that the child, at that time as a student, is going to go to school, the amount of money that is deposited, the original investment, plus the money that has been earned, will equal what the tuition is at that time for the college. And the contract that he's entered into with the state is a contract that says that is insured, that he is guaranteed the prepayment of tuition. The the way that it's decided how much is paid at the time of the initial investment is actuarially decided based on, you know, a formula of what they think the tuition costs would be at the time that the child is enrolled in school. Now, this legislation is based on a plan, the actual plan that Michigan has implemented, and it's been in effect for 2 years in Michigan. The plan is not necessarily an investment for everyone. Those who are able to might wish to invest money in privately or with some other type of investment. But what this does provide is insurance for parents or whomever that wishes to put in a certain amount of money and knows that they don't have to worry about their child's education after that. It's guaranteed. And the administration, the cost of the administration will come out of the fund itself. I've spoken to Michigan and to the people that have been administering this fund, and what has happened there is that they have had an overwhelming public appeal, desire for the fund. I think they opened it for 1 week when it first started. They had 40,000 people that signed up, a $25 application fee. They signed up for the program to participate in it. So they feel it's worked well. Now, there has been a problem, and that's one of the things that I wanted to mention, and there is an amendment which I provided to the committee with copies. There was an IRS tax ruling that was state-specific for the state of Michigan, and basically it said that the purchasers, the people who purchased the initial investment, are not subject to tax on the earnings of the fund. But it did say, and it also said that the beneficiary is the student who goes to school will be taxed when he goes to school because they'll assume he's using the earnings. But that's, even that is minimal because he's not taxed on the whole thing, and it's at his rate, which is generally lower because he hasn't got any income. But one of the problems that Michigan was concerned about with the IRS tax ruling was that the IRS at the time that they came down with the ruling, I think it was last year, said that the trust itself that they have set up was taxable and at the corporate rate, and that could make it quite high. What Michigan has done is has adjusted their contracts to start at a higher rate to allow for that tax ruling. But at the same time, Michigan has also asked the IRS for a tax ruling and to file as a nonprofit to be tax exempt. We don't have the answer back on that yet. So Senator Kurtula felt that the best thing to do with this legislation was to put in an amendment that basically says that no, he would like it to be in law, but no contracts will be entered into until there is an IRS ruling that is available. And the legislation is supported by the Division of Post-Secondary Education and NEA, and if you have any other questions, I'll try and answer them.
Any questions? I guess the question that I would have is how does that affect it? Maybe we shouldn't address it here, but I'm just curious about the fiscal note. If this thing can go on and the IRS may not make a ruling for a year, what do we do?
It is anticipated, it is true that no matter what they do with Michigan, Mr. Chairman, they will have to make a state-specific ruling for here, and it might mean that that no contracts can be entered into within that window of time. That six. Originally, Senator Kurtula was thinking of making a longer effective date. Further down the line. But if the IRS came up with a ruling in 5 months, then this would kick into effect.
Any other questions?
Senator Kelly?
A couple observations. I'm a little concerned that I support the legislation. My concern is that only people who can afford to put up money at this time are going to be able to participate in the program, which is, I would think, a little unfair to the kids whose parents can't afford to put the money up front this time. I would think that there has to be something developed so that the plan doesn't cost anything to the state, but rather those that are participating in the program bear the cost of the program, because they're also going to bear the beneficiary. They're also going to be the beneficiary of the program. The other thing is, I wonder, I noticed we've got the fiscal notes here, is there any way we can roll the student loan corporation into this so they can pick up some of the administrative overhead?
As I understand the fiscal note, all of these, unless I'm reading it wrong, there is no state money at this point involved in the managing of I'd say, Ryan, why don't you come up to the table, too?
Thank you.
Because you're the other one that signed up, and I'll come up now. Ron Pepsi will be joining us. He's the, what is your title, Director of Post-Secondary?
Something like that.
Okay. Did you hear Senator Kelly's concern?
Yes.
You want to address it?
Well, as we understand the bill, the administrative cost would be borne by the trust itself. I know that Florida charges a, I think, a $25 application fee, and Michigan charges a $50 application fee. So if this bill were passed, we would anticipate charging an application fee, which would pay for the administrative costs.
Well, the other thing, Senator Kelly, that would concern me would be, you know, we have an equal responsibility to all of the children in Alaska, whether or not their parents can afford to join a trust fund in advance. And, you know, I would want to make real certain that the amount designed to effectively provide the four-year tuition was not in any way a subsidy for simply those children whose parents can today afford to put money forward in advance, looking 10 or 12 years down the road. And that's a real concern I have. It just not be just another subsidy for only those people that can afford to put trust funds away for their children.
Let me see if this fits with what you're saying. If we look at page one of the bill, and we look at line 20, legislative appropriations to the fund, if we were at this stage to remove that, all other things would be non-legislative.
I'm not interested in legislative appropriations to the fund simply because, you know, you're going to be benefiting those kids whose parents are in a position to trust fund.
I guess my question is, are you suggesting that we say take line 20 out and renumber?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Senator Kelly, if I understand your question, I think the legislation addresses it because it allows for either lump sum payments as an original, as at the time of investment, or a payment plan that can be made so that you don't have to come up. I think that in Michigan it's $1,600 at the time of birth. If you invest at the time of birth of your child, it costs you $1,600. That it can be done either as a lump sum or a payment plan can be initiated so that somebody doesn't have to come up with that right away.
But $1,600 in Michigan, it's got to be $4,000 here.
Well, I don't know what it would be here.
But anyway, I still maintain that, you know, this should not be a legislative appropriation, and any money we put in higher education should benefit all the kids equally, not just those whose parents either have the money or who have the foresight to decide over the dividend checks, which I think is a good idea.
The other concern I had, Ryan, was that, you know, if Florida had 40,000 population-wise, we're going to have very few. In the case of Florida, there's a heck of a lot more choices as far as universities go. We're targeting them here with just University of Alaska. And if you look at the fiscal note, I guess I'm wondering if we only get 200 people signing up, how can we afford to put somebody on full-time?
If I can respond to that. That is certainly a concern. Last year when I was in Missouri, they passed a very similar bill. And the major concern was that you need a critical mass of folks to sign up for this. And if you don't, then I don't think it'll work. Where the critical mass is, I just don't know right now. You certainly need quite a few folks.
And the fiscal note shows all from other. Okay, we can,
I've got two fiscal notes here.
All right, see that for a second.
Ron, and then we've got one from Milt Barker saying it's going to cost him $45,000 in fiscal year 90. They don't see where the money's coming from. Other funds. But
that's the same.
Well,
in my understanding, I have the revenue fiscal note here. You all have it. But the cost of the administration of the funds would be coming out of the fund itself. That was my idea.
Yeah, I guess just following, sorry, if we're talking $120,000 just to to do the administration on the fund, and what's the normal fee, $25 to get in here?
Well, that would be up to, I guess, the...
Yeah, you might have a hard time coming up with enough money. In other words, the idea is to have a fund down the road. We may be ending up, if it's not very successful, just paying out all the money for administration. And I don't know, if you set up a trust, can you take some of that trust fund itself and use it for operation?
For operation?
What I'm saying is, if the people who are contributing to the trust, they got to be guaranteed that that money isn't going to be used for operation and overhead. Otherwise, they're losing out on the trust. I mean, they assume that that has no way of diminishing, but only increasing. So couldn't you end up in a deficit situation, and the trust money's all gone, the people don't really get anything in return, but the administration cost just took all the money? I don't know.
I think we have to be very careful with that, clearly. As I envision it, and we haven't thought this through as much as I would like, but I think the application fee would be above and beyond the trust, and that if we had enough folks signing up for this, would cover the administrative costs. But again, that assumes that there would be quite a few folks signing up for it, and the permanent fund may be that catalyst. I don't know.
Maybe we should establish some threshold number that it has to have X number of people signed up before it goes into effect. I mean, there's going to be interest in it, considerable interest in it, especially since they know that if their kid decides not to go to one of the Alaskan schools, they can go elsewhere and get their money back. So I think there will be interest. I'm coming from David Checks, we get a big play on that program, I would think. But it's a critical mass problem, so they said anyway.
The way you see the trust fund,
I'll get my check to Jim's kid.
Ron, let me ask this. Are you following what Sir Kelly's saying? If somebody has this trust money, they can take it out any time, whether they go to Alaska or not, right?
The bill is very flexible. There are, like, I think we can do what we like to do. For instance, in Michigan, you can take it out until the student reaches that age. In Florida, they can take it out, but they lose the interest. So I think that's open to whatever you folks decide.
So the person that has their child in the trust fund, comes time for them to go to college, they can evaluate it that, well, gee, if I take it out and still go to an Alaskan school, I may be ahead if it's a wealthy fund, or it just pays me to leave it in because I have a guarantee that I'm getting my tuition paid. I mean, that would be a choice at that stage you'd have to look at, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think that the legislation attempts to be broad enough to be flexible so that kind of decision would be made, you know, in regulation. In Michigan, they have maintained, and this was one thing they said had worked very well for them, a lot of flexibility in terms of what constituted grounds for a refund. In Michigan, they give a refund if somebody goes out of state, or they even have provisions for prorating it if somebody goes to a school in an out-of-state university. They just have made it very flexible.
You might want to look at page 5 also, and maybe you can change. So university means University of Alaska, including a community college affiliate. We don't have the community college anymore.
We do.
We do? Yeah. Well, you're right. Okay.
I've been told that was your
That's the case with Senator Kelly, you want to make a motion as far as these talking fund? Two, let's say appropriation to the fund might satisfy. Otherwise, if you leave that in, and I'm asking and probably an answer out there, if we leave it in, then during the budget process, it's just easy to put money into the account, right? Where you don't need a separate building.
Well, I agree with the program, but I don't believe it's up to the state to subsidize the program. It applies on its own, and that's the way it should go, and we should pass it in the law, but I'm not going to subsidize the program for just students whose parents can afford to pay the trust fund in advance.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jones, who is subsidizing it if the fund doesn't, the earnings of the fund don't keep up with inflation in the education system?
in the college.
That's a real.
Because you're guaranteeing that student that they'll be, regardless of what it earns, that amount of money is going to pay for the tuition.
My concern is that whoever's coming up with the regulations and law will be more concerned with getting people enrolled in the program than having an actuarially sound. That's a concern, but I don't think that we should take the responsibility on subsidizing
and less.
Well, what we can do, how about the threshold number? What's the feeling of the committee? You think we need to look at it and come up with a certain number? Have somebody come in with a number and let us know that if you don't get that many, there's no trust. So,
I think we should get some. Do we have numbers here yet? I didn't see that.
Well, we could. What we could do, we can hold the bill over and take it up Monday.
Well, we're gonna have to get some numbers.
Yeah,
finance. We probably have more time in finance.
Well, it's up to you. If you want to wait here for numbers, the chair would entertain a motion also on the legislative appropriation to the fund. If you want to take that out, which means at least that if they ever want to put money into it,
I'll move that we take out the legislative appropriation to the fund.
Okay. Any objections? Okay, so we can delete that. And what about the concern about threshold number?
Well, where is the threshold number?
Well, I don't think there is one. There isn't.
Well, what do you mean by threshold number?
I thought you had indicated you wanted a number that we have to have.
I see what you're saying. Yes. Well, I mean, it has to be.
Everybody said she said so.
If it's going to pay its own way, you're going to have a sufficient number of people in there where it just. Their whole contribution isn't taken up on administrative costs. It's unfortunate they have to pay the paid employee cut as opposed to somebody else. But,
yeah.
But I don't know, maybe they could do some work on it and come back with a number.
Could you do that and try, if you have something done by Monday? Senator Jones, usually, like any benefit program, actually look at it and tell you what it takes to fund it. Looks like, down the road, 10, 20 years.
Well, why don't we do that? Why don't we take a look at it, have somebody come in, show us from an actuarial point of view, just what do we really need to make something like this fly exclusive of state money, if it were set up as a separate trust, independent of state contribution. We'll see what it comes out to.
Are these contributions X number of dollars a year or like a one-time contribution?
Either way, it's opened. If the person has enough dollars to plunk it down right away, that's fine.
Say you have an 8-year-old child, and you want to give their dividend check every year. Right? So, if it was normally a $6,000 item, but you only got $800 the first year, then it would actually you end up prorating that out. So, it'd be more than six. It'd be more like eight if you were paying over a period of years. Correct.
Correct. Yes.
I want to make sure that the numbers make sense so it doesn't end up with the legislature's guarantee and we've got this $10 million liability out there for a special set of kids whose his parents had money at this stage of the game.
Paula, do you have a question or comment?
No, I had a comment just because the comparison between the way Florida handles this particular problem and Michigan, I won't necessarily solve it, but Michigan constitutionally can't incur any debt. So what they do if it were to happen that they find the investment is not keeping up with inflation, what they do or would do, because it's only 2 years old, is to increase the cost of the contract, in other words, for the future, for the people who pay in the future, in order to catch up, basically. That's how Michigan is essentially handling it. Florida, on the other hand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Florida, on the other hand, the state backs the guarantee completely so that if their investment doesn't keep up with the rising cost of tuition, the state must pay the difference, which is what I understand that you are saying you don't want, right? But that's just two different ways, basically, of doing it. In other words, there are ways of handling it.
Why would the university itself want to start a trust fund? Maybe that would be the best way, wouldn't it? Why doesn't the university say, we're going to start our own internal trust fund and go with it and leave the legislature out of it? Has anybody explored that?
I can't speak to the university. But I imagine it's the whole critical mass problem again. You need a lot of folks signing up a lot of dollars, so it realizes superior earnings to, I think that's a major issue. And if I may, there is a compromise between the amount of restrictions you place on this. For instance, if you say, once you put the money in, you can't touch it until the student's 18 years old, but then that strengthens the earning power of that fund. So the less the restrictions, the more people you need. And we're going to have to work through that, I think.
The fact that we're saying here has to be the University of Alaska, so that's pretty tight restriction, I would think.
Mr. Chairman, well, it has to be. However, you can use the money for essentially any other thing. You can go to an institution, a private institution in state or out of state. You can not go to school at all if you prefer.
But the only way you're guaranteed education is if you go to the University of Alaska. All these other ones, you're taking a gamble and pulling your money out of the fund and hoping that you have some money. But if the way the program goes, you know you're guaranteed an education no matter if it triples the cost at the University of Alaska. And that's why I'm wondering, why would the university want to get on the bandwagon and say, well, look, we'll internally offer this. And probably, I don't even know if it had to be set up as a trust if they were to do it. I don't know what it would be, but it'd be a contract with them and you. If you give X number of dollars a year, your kid's going to be at the University of Alaska. Senator Duncan?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm having a little hard time with this bill. I think it's probably a good idea, and I think I'll support it. I'm not convinced it's going to be all that successful. I guess I got to tell you why I don't. I mean, I'm not sure why when we go through life not trusting government and not trusting people who invest our money, who invest the government's money, why all of a sudden people are going to flock to this piece of legislation, giving the government money to invest for them. Most people could probably do as well or better if they just did it on their own. So I guess, not only hurts anything, but I don't think we're going to have people charging in saying, oh my God, finally there's somebody out there who can invest my money for me, the state government, they did such a great job. I mean, I guess I don't understand for sure, because there doesn't seem to be any real tax benefit, tax break coming along the line. It's not like the earnings aren't taxable because you're putting them into a government trust. It's a good idea, but I don't necessarily see that. I think we're probably beating us to death, and there may not be that great rush.
Senator, in Michigan,
if you have a child, for $1,600, you're guaranteeing that child's 4-year education. That's not a bad deal.
But you can take that $1,600 and invest it yourself and probably have the same amount of money or more when that child gets ready to go to college. You're not doing anything other than giving the state $1,600 to invest for you for the next 10 years. You can probably do that on your own and perhaps do better and have the ability to move the money around yourself. I'm not saying it shouldn't be done. It's not a great idea. I'm just saying all of a sudden people have gotten that great faith in government that they can handle their money better than they can handle themselves. I don't believe that's going to happen. And I'm not speaking against the bill.
No, I know.
Senator
Duncan. I think that one of the situations is that this is not necessarily going to be seen as, how can I say this right, as an investment, but more as an insurance. And yes, it's true. You can probably go, I was thinking in terms of myself with my son. Yes, I could take some money and invest it and probably do better, or I might think that way. But for my peace of mind to deposit X number of dollars today, and no, I don't have to worry about it again, because his college education is assured, is, I think, probably what the main thrust of this is, rather than looking at making money, but more as an insurance policy. That's
the real advantage of this bill that I see is that permanent fund dividend change. And that's the one where the parent can feel perfectly guilt-free by assigning the child's check over this program every year until they pay for the education. That's where you're going to get the big participation in this program, is where I think.
Well, that's we'll hold the bill over, and we'll try to get somebody by Monday.
I think as well, it's good. You know, we'll count.
No, I don't. I think this is great, because I like to see people trust government. Do you agree?
We're here to help you, right?
And we're here to help you, right?
We'll hold it over to Monday and see if we can't get somebody to give us, you know, what does it really take? How many are we going to need? And I guess the question I would have is, why would not the university want to do it?
They do.
Oh, you do? Then what are you coming here for? Can't you do it without legislation?
It would be helpful.
That's... Okay.
Anyway, I think it's worth it. Mr. Chairman, I want to be sure my comments are understood. I think it's worthwhile doing. I'm just not sure that we're going to have the great rush to it that people think we're going to have, because I think it would be hard for people to understand. Secondly, I don't know that it really does anything more attractive for them, what they can do for themselves.
And I would say, in another state, you might be right, but the big difference here is the permanent fund dividend check. I think that's what makes the difference in this program.
And are you suggesting maybe that we ought to tie it in just with that, some kind of program?
I'm not suggesting at all, but I think that's what's going to make it successful.
You may be right. I'm not trying to.
I think if Senator Jones really care about the education, they're already putting that money into an education fund of some kind.
It would make it easier to take it forward.
Okay. Thanks for coming. We'll have the weekend anyhow to look at it. Okay, we will go on to the next order of business. It's Senate Bill 73, Retirement Incentive Programs, PERS and TERS. And the prime sponsor of the bill is Senator Duncan. So Senator Duncan,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how much in detail you want me to go, but I'm going to spend about 4 or 5 minutes reviewing the bill, if I could. Senator Kelly's heard the bill in the State Affairs Committee, of course. And of course, I am familiar with the bill, but I think it's worth reviewing. As you recall, in 1986, we did establish a retirement incentive program to reduce the hardship of layoffs. And it's intended to result in net reduction of personal services costs to the state or other employers during that period of declining revenue. The program ran from 1986 to late 1987, allowed an incentive credit of 3 years to employees in the public employees retirement system and also the teachers retirement system. And during that period of time, 2,327 public employees, that includes teachers, state employees, university, and municipal employees, took advantage of the retirement incentive program. The Senate State Affairs Committee substitute that's in the packet that was adopted by the State Affairs Committee reestablishes the program and will allow 6-month application periods in 1989 and 90 for state employees, for teachers, municipal employees, and University of Alaska employees. Under the bill, just as in the former program, you get a 3-year credit. It can be added to service years or age, depending on the individual's requirements for retirement. Under the program, if the employer elects to participate, long-term employees are provided an incentive to retire, but the decision of whether or not each employee chooses to participate is at the employee's option. The decision as to whether or not the employer participates is also at the employer's option, so it's not mandatory, it's an optional program. So I want to also emphasize the program does require that participating employees pay the amount they would have paid into the retirement system had they continued to work for 3 years at the same salary. So it's not free to them. They are paying their share of the package, the normal amount that they would have paid if they continued to work. And the remainder of the actuarial cost is then paid by the employer. The one question that kept coming up, of course, early in the session was, did we save any money under this program? Was it successful? And we've tried to evaluate that. There's an audit in your package that indicates that on a conservative side, conservatively, $14.5 million was saved by state government over a 3-year period. That audit's there, and we can go through it in detail. And those legislative auditors here also, I guess, if we have questions. And I say it's on a conservative side because those are the terms I heard the auditor use. And also, the audit figures, the savings of $14.5 million only represents salaries for retired positions, and does not include the savings and benefits associated with those positions. So if you did not refill positions. If you save personal services costs as far as salary goes, you also save some dollars in benefits. And a rough estimate on that that we've been able to work out would be the total savings in a 3-year period of somewhere near $25 million for state employees. Also in the packet is a report from the Division of Retirement Benefits of the savings to the school districts, municipalities, and we recently have information on the savings to the university program for 86 and 87. The school districts that reported in report a sizable savings of over $31 million. Municipalities report a saving of almost $5 million, and the university reported that they saved a total of $22.3 million through their participation in the program. So it indicates there was substantial savings in the program. That ranged throughout the state. Just for those members of this committee, Ketchikan reported the city that they saved $1.2 million, and Kenai Peninsula School District $2.9 million, and Kenai Peninsula Rural about $700,000. So Anchorage saved, North Slope, Fairbanks, Juneau, Valdez, right on down the line. There was some concern about possible abuses of the program. We have tried to tighten that up the best we can. The committee substitute, one area was that perhaps some people retired shouldn't have retired. The committee substitute in section 3B on page 4 states very plainly the plan may not permit an employee who is the commissioner of the department, deputy commissioner of the department, or an assistant commissioner to participate. Another indirect benefit, Mr. Chairman, of the RIP program is the compensation dollars are retained in our economy, which otherwise might have been lost if lower-level employees were laid off. Many employees were laid off, move out of state to find work. Data shows that about 70% of the retirees in both the public employees retirement system and teachers retirement system choose to remain in Alaska. Therefore, we've retained that retirement check in the economy, which continues to circulate through and helps the economy. We've also retained a number of people working. There's a list of folks in your or organization agree with the exception that there needs to be a slight change in the date because I guess of a misunderstanding in state affairs. I've got an amendment proposed, but I think Director of Retirement Benefits can speak to that, and it's more and less a technical change than anything else, I understand. Move the day one date, or date one day, one way or the other, and we can get into that. I do think it's an amendment that's worthy of adoption, does need to be adopted in order to be sure that the window dates are correct. Mr. Chairman, that summarizes it pretty well. I think the program is worthy of support. The information we have has indicated that there's probably 7,000 employees in the state in those various retirement systems who would be eligible for the program at this time. That's about the same number that we were eligible 2 years ago. Based on the rate of participation 2 years ago, about a 30% rate, we estimate that the same number who participated last time, close to the same number would perhaps participate this time. I think the bottom line is that does show that it did save money, a responsible way of saving money, and avoided some layoffs of people who had normally been laid off. It allowed substantial cost reduction in personal services, and the indirect book that I said is, I think, a very good stimulus to the economy at this period of time. So I'd be happy to answer questions, and maybe those who want to testify on the legislation.
Any questions directly to Senator? Okay, this is Mary Height.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Barry Haight. I represent the Interior Public Employees Coalition. The Interior Public Employees Coalition wholeheartedly supports the committee substitute for Senate Bill 73. We think it's effective legislation. It's positive. The previous program that Senator Duncan mentioned worked very well. And I'd like to just take a minute of the committee's time to describe on a local government level the beneficial effects that Senator Duncan referred to. In 1987, the city of Fairbanks and other local government was looking at cutbacks, and very simply because of the existence of the previous program, rather than layoffs, there were early retirements. In the case of the city fire department, 10 employees did early retire, and 8 of those 10 remained in the community. So therefore, they were there to benefit the local economy. They were not financially impacted themselves and younger employees still working in the city and needing the job were able to remain on the job. And we think it was a win-win situation. We're facing further cutbacks in local government. I expect that there will be, not only in the city, perhaps in the borough, there's been threats in the local school system. I expect that if this bill does become law, and I hope it does, there will be similar participation as there was last time, and once again, just simply allowing local government to cut back without financially damaging workers and further damaging the economy. We certainly don't need to lose more jobs in Fairbanks, and this early retirement is one way to accomplish that. Thank you.
Any questions? I just have just a couple basic. The people that you laid off in the city fire department, what are they doing now? Are they unemployed, or are they, do they seek other employment within the government structure?
Well, Senator, we didn't actually have a layoff because of the early retirement. Yes. There were 10 firefighters who early retired. 8 of them remained in the area and apparently intend to. Some of them are working part-time at other jobs. Others are simply retired and are doing other things other than work in the community. And they have remained.
So they're not coming back to work for any other agency that's on the state retirement
system? No, sir. I'm not a one. I'm aware of one driving school bus part-time. Most of the others are doing charitable or civic or organizational work and are not actually working a job for pay.
Any questions? Thank you. David Crosby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Crosby. I am the president of the Juneau Board of Education. I have passed up to you our resolution 5-89 supporting Senate Bill 73. We enthusiastically support this. Juneau, like a number of other districts, is up against the cap in terms of funding. As of this year, we will not be able to spend any additional funds on education unless either the foundation formula fund is increased or there is some possibility that the 21% cap might be increased to 23. In either event, we're looking at a fairly bleak revenue picture in the future. This legislation will ease that somewhat. The last time around, Juneau did participate. We had approximately 30 employees participate. We saved over a five-year period approximately $1.2 million. This year we will have between 46 and perhaps more than that, 50 employees eligible, and we believe that we would recognize similar savings. It would ease some of the financial crunch in terms of our negotiated contract increases and enable us to keep our teacher staff size up and keep our pupil-teacher ratios reasonable. So we enthusiastically support it.
Any questions? The schedule that we have here shows so-called, and I say so-called because there's a guess, savings over 5 years. And I don't know, I guess if you go look over 5 years, you might see that really you can't just take 1 year and multiply by five. But what about the quality of education versus the cost? The object here is it not, I mean, being in the school business, isn't the object of education is to provide the best possible education for your students. And what we're saying here is in the educational circle, well, gee whiz, we can get rid of somebody with 15, 20, 17 years experience and go hire somebody with new experience, and therefore there's a cost savings. Is there a relationship in your way of thinking of experience and tenure as to how good a teacher will be or how well our children learn?
It can work both ways. Teaching is a tough profession on people. I mean, the phrase burnout is a fairly common one. I don't mean to suggest by any stretch of the imagination that after a teacher is taught for 17 years that they are necessarily burned out. But I do know that oftentimes an infusion of young blood can be very helpful. Also, I think that there are some teachers whose dedication to the profession is such that they would choose not to retire. on balance, I think we make out better. We do lose some excellent teachers. We would have lost those teachers in another year or two anyway if they were thinking about retiring. At least at this point, it helps us with a tremendous and imminent fiscal crisis.
They passed out, and I don't think it was this committee. It was the State Board of Education was here. And I'm sorry I didn't have it. But they've shown 10 different school districts, and the districts, believe it or not, that had the highest reading comprehension and the highest of everything were those districts that had experienced teachers. Mm-hmm. What I hear you saying is to get rid of those experienced teachers for an economic group may not be all that bad if you don't lose that so-called experience factor at all.
Well, you'd have to look at a case-by-case basis. We don't go out and hire, for example, necessarily people right out of college. Our starting salaries average are about $37,000, although our lowest salary is $27,000, which indicates that we are generally hiring people with experience. I mean, I would not deny that there is a loss of experience factor here. I don't think that without knowing the individuals involved, I don't think you can say necessarily that it's a substantial loss or one that the district can't weather.
Do you know if the district turned down any requests for teachers?
To my knowledge, we did not.
How about a superintendent? Do you think a superintendent should fall under the same category, even though he may only have 1 year left on his contract, or no years left on his contract?
I really, in our particular district, we have a young, vigorous superintendent.
I'm not asking your district, but overall, is it a good policy to allow a position that when the situation gets sticky, the bailout on an early retirement? I'm talking superintendency, only, or not teacher.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess if you have an employee that's that is that close, their feeling about the district is such that they are ready to bail out a year early, then maybe you wish them well and say goodbye.
No, the reason I'm looking at superintendencies is it would be an indirect way of buying them out. Would it not? The contract urge them to go and will contribute the $20,000 local effort you put up yours and away you go.
That would be true for teachers and superintendents.
Yeah, the difference, well, there might be a little difference, but do you have any of these teachers that you're aware of that say did take early retirement that are back under a personal contract with the district now or back working for the district?
I am not personally aware of any such situation in our district.
This isn't a court situation, but would you agree that if somebody retires from a system, they shouldn't be coming back on the system in an indirect way, say as a contract or something? Well, they do have the experience, there's no question about that. They might do better as a private contractor, even though they're on a retirement system. You think that that's equitable under this early retirement? That's all we're doing.
Well, I guess, frankly, that's not something that I'm concerned about. We operate at different levels of government, and there are some strange games that go on to make all the square pegs go into the round holes. From our standpoint, three-quarters of our budget comes from the foundation fund, and if the legislature can't increase that funding for us, we cannot, as a matter of law, spend any more for education because we're up against the gap. Now, we've got to do something. This is one thing that we can do, or one thing that the legislature can do for us that will ease our budget situation, and I have to look at it from that standpoint of the crisis that we're facing in funding.
But if the price of oil, I understand, you're $19 or something now, and if you got a windfall of a 5% increase in the foundation, would you still want to have the early retirement? And I'm just prying because, I've had some people that had gotten in touch with me, and like the original argument was that people stay in town, and I just went through the list, and the first one that was on my list, two out of the three that retired are gone. They're not even in the state anymore. And then on this cost saving, and I don't have the particular, the one municipality said that they saved, I think, something like $20,000. The position that resigned or took early retirement was a police chief. So I called him up and I said, well, what did you do? We had to hire another police chief. I said, what was the net gain? He said, nothing. So that's why I'm wondering, and I'm looking at these, are these really real figures? We talk about an actual gain. Of course, I'm concerned, especially in education. I hate to see the good teachers, boy, just be put out to pasture know, through something like this when they should really be still working with kids.
Well, there's nothing in the bill that forces people to retire. We did have people who were eligible to retire that chose not to retire. So that's an individual choice, and I think for those that chose not to retire, it was a reflection of their dedication to the teaching profession.
Yeah, okay. I just want to add and appreciate your testimony. And you've just hit the point I wanted to hit. It's entirely optional as far as we're not mandating that any school district participate, nor are we mandating that they let any certain person retire, for example, like a superintendent. What the legislation does say is it's got to show a reduction in savings, or it's got to, not a reduction in cost, it's got to be a savings, right? And so the method of implementing the program is left up to each individual governing agency, in this case, the Board of School Board, the Anchorage School Board, the Anchorage Municipality, et cetera. They can structure the program the way they want. It's broad enough. So, you know, they've got to, in their mind, justify that it's going to be saving money in order to do it. That's what the legislation says. So we're trying to accommodate.
Is it my imagination, or is it easier to show outright savings in a TRS system than a PERS system? Is it easier just to drop? Teachers go by so much by years in grade as opposed to positions. Then it seems to me that the data I saw showed much better savings in a TRS system than a PERS system. Am I wrong about that?
I really couldn't address that.
The data that we have in our file, Senator Kelly, does show a larger savings in the school districts than it does in the municipalities or even the state government. Also, the university shows a large savings. However, well, I guess the answer to that is yes, but I'm trying to figure out what the rest of your question is.
There was no point to it.
Okay.
I just wanted you to know that I'd read the data.
Oh, no, I
interpreted.
Okay. Yeah, I do it. Well, no, this is something. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This Bob Manners, and then Sally, we'll save you the last. Not that, well, you just have here if needed, and I do have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Manners. I'm with NEA Alaska. You do have our position paper in your packet, and we support and encourage this legislation. I would like to just emphasize two things. First, the sponsor has referenced a possible minor amendment in terms of the window period. We do support that in that it maximizes the savings potential for school districts. The other point I want to make is that you've talked about finite numbers vis-a-vis savings to date. I think that this kind of legislation represents even longer term savings down the road, 5 years, 10 years, beyond even where we are right now, which has a significant potential positive impact both on the state, on the school district, and municipal governments where they choose to participate in the program. So I wanted to make that emphasis. I will attempt to respond to questions, but reserve my right to evade the questions of the chair if they're similar to the one of the previous witness.
Well, why would you want to do that? I'll ask a different one now. Any questions of Bob Manners? Yeah, I had one. Oh, she wouldn't have said that. Now I think it's different, too. Oh, gosh. Well, just let me ask you this one. There was a district up my way, or a borough up my way, that the old city manager, or the old borough manager, had the theory that for cost reasons only, you hire a teacher until they're ready for tenure, then you get rid of them because that way you always keep low paid. And I would assume you don't concur with that philosophy at all.
No. No, but I do not concur with that philosophy.
I can't beat you into anything. No. Okay, but you would agree that experience does mean something. And at which point is experience an unproductive as far as game goes.
I at first point they want to retire.
That's when it becomes unproductive. So I guess then, you know, the question obvious is then why 3 years, why not five? You know, let somebody with 15 years out instead of holding them there to theoretically 17.
We could support that.
Flexible. I'm thinking of that other question. I reserve the right to ask you back.
I'll come back.
I can't think of what it was. Sally Smith.
Was that the amendment? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sally, the question that I have is from an actuarial point of view. And I'm not sure. If somebody's making, I'll just say $50,000 and you take the 3 year, does their contribution and the state's contribution, are they equal? Or is the, under TRS, let's say, is the government contribution greater than the person that's retired? Or are they the same?
Mr. Chair, if I understand your question, it's forward funding of the system, are the contributions equal? We forward fund the system.
No, I guess what I'm saying is if a person takes retirement, okay, under this bill, as I understand it, they have to upfront their, what they would normally pay for 3 years.
Yes.
The governmental agency can spread it out, but is it an equal amount by the governmental agency as the employee?
Yes, I understand it, yes.
It is. And is it actuarially, sound? I mean, we're not.
Yes, it is. No, we're not.
Without the state's contribution, what would happen? I mean, without the match, it would be a wash. I mean, we would lose money in that case, right?
Yes, we would. The system would lose money, certainly.
Okay.
It's the funding, of course, is based on what's going to be taken out in all future years. And so the reason that you're buying in that amount is to pay for those additional 3 years of benefit down the road.
Senator Kelly.
Sally, is the system sound enough actuarially to handle this?
Mr. Chair, through you to the Senator, yes it is. We are very lucky to have one of the finest systems in the country.
Well, I know that's true in terms of benefits, but in terms of payability.
Yes, Mr. Chair, as far as soundness of the funds, yes, they're 99. Another decimal.
That's not my question. The question is, can it absorb this increase and still remain sound?
Yes, the way it's structured and the way it's set up, you'll notice we've got a fiscal note attached to this, and it speaks to the fact that it does not have an impact on the funds, on the unfunded liability.
I was just going to say that. The way the bill is structured, since we're requiring payment by the employee, you know, he has contributed his amount, and the employer makes an actual result sound. It has not impacted the impact. Best of my information, I didn't mean to interject.
No, that's correct, Mr. Chair, and that's why we have that addition. The fiscal note is set up so that the employers, in essence, are forward funding our administrative costs as well. So there's not an administrative cost to the state. In addition to which, there's a page that speaks to the unfunded ratio, or the ratio of the unfunded liability, and it doesn't project an appreciable change.
So I just want a question. You're with retirement benefits. How do you define retirement? I'm just curious. What is retirement? I'm serious, but what is retirement?
Well, according to statute, Mr. Chair, the retirement systems are in place to attract and retain qualified government employees. I believe it says qualified public service employees.
Oh,
that,
okay.
That says it's essentially defined in law, and we prepare for, we try to keep them by setting up monies for comfortable retirement.
No, I just looked it up in the dictionary out of curiosity. It said withdrawal from work, business, et cetera, because of age. You know, I don't know. I'm 39 years old.
Oh, Webster wrote that.
No, this wasn't Webster. This was the other guy. No.
Well, I'm actually citing statute, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
you. And the plan is to bring this out most likely on Monday. And the only thing is, I just wanted to look and see if there would be, we're still looking in to see how many people are taking the retirement and coming back on a personal contract, and we're not finding all that.
Sure, before we do the forum, though, or we can do it Monday, but
yes.
Could we adopt that technical limit on the date so it can be redrafted?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we can ask and have consent, we adopt the technical amendments and insert them into the CS.
Yes. Okay, any objections? No, you got that? Okay, so with that, we'll adjourn and...
Monday?
No. Well, Friday, probably.